TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
The colonial urge to make money out of the climate crisis. The Indigenous Climate Action, ICA, and Environmental Network, IEN, are unpacking false solutions. They held a webinar on October 26 to warn us of false solutions to global heating, such as carbon pricing, natural gas, hydrogen, hydroelectricity, geoengineering, carbon capture, and net zero emissions. Here's the moderator, Carol Montour.
I'm the climate leadership coordinator here at ICA. I'm also Mohawk Wolf Clan from Six Nations of the Grand River, where I'm coming to you live. I think with that, I'll pass off to Sage to introduce herself.
Yeah, so my name is Gara Quineta. I also go by Sage. I'm Bear Clan and I'm from Gahnawage. I'm also Taos Pueblo and Zuni Pueblo. And I'm a little bit tired today, but I'm also super happy to be a part of the panel.
Julia.
Hi, good morning, afternoon, wherever you are. My name is Julia Bernal. I am from Sandia Pueblo and Yuchi. I'm the executive director for Pueblo Action Alliance, and I'm calling in from Sandia, New Mexico. Hope you all are well. Thank you.
And just over to Thomas Joseph.
Hello, my name is Thomas Joseph. I come from the village of Sewanalden. I am a Hoopa Valley tribal member located in the Six Rivers National Forest of what's so-called California. I am the carbon pricing educator with the Indigenous Environmental Network, and it is an honor to be amongst friends and family here on the panel. Thank you.
And so thank you again to our panelists. Everybody here has some really great knowledge to share. So I think we're going to get into our first question, which is that we're seeing a lot of these false solutions being pushed forward. As the climate crisis worsens, it's also being politicized more. And so what to each of the panelists, what is your first red flag that a proposed solution is a false one? And I'll probably pass this over to Julia first.
Okay. I think for many of us that have been utilizing a grassroots narrative that is around opposition to false solutions or false climate solutions, is that they are mechanisms that are placed in the market. Thus continues this perpetual cycle of commodification, of exploitation of labor, of extractivism, meaning the creating of surplus of resources to appease the demand of the market. And so when we're applying this definition of false solutions to the climate crisis, we're directly speaking to the blueprint of climate adaptation, climate mitigation that is purely nested in the market. Rather than keeping fossil fuels in the ground, rather than returning stewardship back to Indigenous peoples, we are looking at climate world leaders proposing solutions that will continue capitalism, will continue neoliberalism, transnational corporations. For example, there are a lot of folks that are fighting against carbon capture and sequestration, against hydrogen production, because the production of hydrogen could use fossil fuels, towards geoengineering fixes. So this movement to invest dollars, energy dollars, into developing and new types of energy infrastructure that are supposed to geoengineer our way out of the crisis. So I think that's like, for some of us, how we would define what a false solution is, where we're saying like no to commodification, no to the financialization of nature, and keeping things in the ground, keeping fossil fuels in the ground. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. And I'll probably pass off to Thomas Joseph now of, to you, what is a false solution and what's your red flags that something is one?
Thank you. We need to stay focused on like, what is the cause of climate change? What has got us into this crisis and this predicament that we find ourselves in? We want to recognize the vital role that colonialization has played in creating climate change. And knowing that when we rely on systems of colonialism that is heavily embedded with patriarchy and white supremacy, that these are the precursors to a false solution. When Vice President at the time, Al Gore, introduced flexible mechanisms into the Kyoto Protocols, that was the creation of these systems that continue to commodify our Mother Earth and put a price tag on carbon or the sequestration of carbon. We're now seeing the price tag being put on whales, being put on elephants, being put on buffalo. These systems that continue to commodify our Mother Earth are some of the root causes of climate change, and that we can't continue to use these systems of capitalism, of patriarchy, to address climate change. That has what got us into this mess. It's not going to get us out of this mess. And so also on the other side of that, that is what has caused climate change. How do we move out of climate change? How do we create systems that are going to allow indigenous people to thrive? How are we going to create systems that's going to allow a rebalance of our Mother Earth? Understanding that this reciprocal relationship with our Mother Earth is also brings solutions to our social injustice movements as well. When our planet is out of balance, which we're experiencing right now, we also see how our communities are out of balance. When we see women not being paid equal rates, when we see the transgender community being hindered down, being abused and being neglected, those things are connected. And so for a red flag for me is when we continue to use those same type of systems that create climate change and not using systems of indigenous matriarchy, of creating economies based on the importance of equality. Thank you.
And yeah, I'll probably pass it off to my Mohawk sister, Sage. What to you is a false solution, and what are your red flags that it is one?
Yeah, I don't know how I'm supposed to follow up with those two killer answers. You guys kind of covered everything. But just to kind of go over like red flags that we've seen in our own community of Kahnawake is the fact that they're putting like currency at the forefront of each solution, and they always present like money as a solution to us. Like when we get these deals presented to us, what they claim to be solutions, they just slap it over with like a number, and they're like, well, we can do this, you can build a culture center with this, you can do all these elements with this, but don't actually discuss the root cause of the situation, like both my relatives here had it discussed. It's embedded in everything. Like every solution that we've looked at so far is just kind of how it contributes or how it makes other people wealthy, as opposed to how do we go back to our original ways of knowing and dealing with our, like being the custodians of the land. Like we're as Ngwehuna, as the original people, we're here to take care of the land, and then we're not here to stay. Like we know our relationship is only here for a short while, whereas all these like Western ideologies are trying to put at the forefront of how we can keep going, as opposed to how we can keep our relationship with the land, because we are inherently interconnected with the land, and we follow as Ngwehuna the Ahundugare Wadakwa and Gayanregoa, like the words before all else and our great law principle, and how that interconnects with us. So a lot of the times when we get these solutions, it doesn't follow any of those protocols, and you know, it's not fantastic.
Yeah, thank you everyone. And so I think that leads me to another question that I'll pose to all the panelists, but I'll ask Thomas Joseph first. What are the solutions that need to be pushed forward so that we're not replicating the same systems? Like what needs to be in that framework?
Again, the fossil fuel industry, the burning of fossil fuels is what is causing climate change. That needs to be addressed. We need to be able to reduce emissions at source, not using techno fixes like carbon capture, not expanding the fossil fuel industry into projects like the Willows Project. This is what needs to happen. But in the same time, we need to be able to introduce an indigenous just transition that's going to be able to transform our economies and our communities into something that's not going to continue to replicate the colonial practices that we've been having to endure since settler contact. We need to be able to address the capitalistic system that is continuing to rape and pillage our Mother Earth and push communities of color into harm's way. And so there's an indigenous just transition needs to come forward, which is acknowledging the importance of a matriarchal economy, as also the importance of all of the ills that our society faces when it comes to labor, when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to school. I also feel like a topic that is very, very often neglected in these UN spaces and in these global talks is the role of the imperial war practices. We see talks of war, we hear about war going on right now. We understand that the United States military is the largest producer of fossil fuel emissions, and yet that's always off the table. It's never being talked about on a global network on how to address climate change. That also needs to become part of the conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. But I'll pose the same question to Julia. What needs to be addressed in order to move forward to address the climate crisis?
I think we have to make sure we're looking at things systemically. There's a lot within like a false solutions narrative and analysis, there's a lot of greenwashing happening. And greenwashing is really a way for to confuse like the consumer, the individual, the civilian, confuse them into thinking that the choices that they're making have an impact on the climate crisis. So like, you know, recycling, going vegan, like these kind of like individualistic solutions are actually perpetuated by oil and gas industry. They're actually like fed by the oil and gas industry. So like the term carbon footprint was actually coming out of oil and gas industry. And so I think like it's important for us to look at the systems that perpetuate climate crisis and the ways that even capitalism is capitalizing off of the crisis. This is just an economic opportunity in many ways. We're seeing a crisis, therefore there needs to be money invested in technology that can mitigate the climate crisis. That's opening different types of markets and thus is an economic opportunity. So that's like another way on like why our global, you know, grassroots indigenous movement that is against false solutions repeatedly saying that we cannot have solutions that are within market-based mechanisms because it's essentially just upholding global capitalism.
Yeah, thank you, Julia. And I'll hand that one off to Sage of what needs to be addressed in order to address the climate crisis meaningfully.
It's addressing the root cause of climate change and looking that, like, stop using umbrella ideations for solutions. I feel like that's the main thing. So like we're diversity and we need to have like diversity, but we need to have place-based needs and solutions to the territories, because like a lot of times it's just umbrella termed. And like Julia had said, like it's just contributing to capitalism. And she had also brought up a really important point of like of the individual. And we talked about this in our delegation a hot minute ago of like it, when we think of the individual of the I, we've already lost. We need to think of the we and the collective and how we can come together to find a solution. Now, one person can make a change, but it's better if we all come together and we make those changes together and make those kind of flow with us. And when we're thinking about solutions, we have to strive away from the Western ideologies, because when we look in those ways, we've already kind of lost in the sense, because as I said before, they're not as connected as we are with the land. And we need to look at indigenous-led solutions into an indigenous-led just transition, like Thomas had said and brought up. And then as an elder youth, I suppose, in this group, we need to like make sure when we're talking about this solutions, we're also dealing with a lot of grief, ecological grief that's associated with this loss, right? Loss and damage. And we need to, when we talk about solutions, I'm sure we're going to get to that question later on, we need to prioritize that climate action also pertains to learning your traditional language, learning your songs, learning your culture and your dances and your and practicing every day. That is climate action. And I think that needs to be really presented to youth, because it can be really hard and heavy when we hear all of these things occurring around the world, and it can be really detrimental. So I think it's really important that we highlight all the really positive elements that our communities are doing. Like for me, Kahnawake, we have Redi Winter Nirnets, which is an adult Gunungaha immersion program, and it's bringing it back to life and it's following our traditional ways of knowing and being. And I think that's really important that we highlight this.
Yeah, thank you, Sage. And I think we're going to have a second part of this webinar on uplifting real solutions. So you're just like looking into the future already. But I think we're going to maybe segue a little and ask another question of what are some solutions that are being put forward in your territory that you consider to be false, and how will these impact your community and nation? And I think that we'll pass it off to Julia, because I feel like this happens a lot in your territory. I see this all the time.
Yeah. And I want to try and like address some of these questions in the chat. Well, what do we do? Like, what are our solutions? Like, how are we going to create energy? How are we going to do it equitably? How are we going to do it without exploitation? And so like a little history about New Mexico, we're a very dense indigenous territory, but we're also very resource rich. And so New Mexico has been historically deemed as a national energy sacrifice zone, meaning that communities, land, water, are essentially sacrificed for energy production in the United States. That means oil and gas, uranium, and now we're even facing hydrogen energy production, and that's something that a lot of us in New Mexico are working on currently. And hydrogen is an interesting example because it is being touted on a global level to be a way to implement the just transition, that this is a stepping stone to phasing out fossil fuels. But with rigorous research and a lot of people keeping their eyes on hydrogen, there are so many ways that you can produce hydrogen, and using fossil fuels, using natural gas, using nuclear, using biomass are all ways that you can, even using solar and wind are all ways that you can create hydrogen. But this is going to take so much infrastructure. I mean, we're talking about pipeline highways that are going to go across the United States. A lot of the times, hydrogen is coupled with carbon capture and sequestration. So the re-quipping of existing wells to inject liquid carbon back into the ground. But it's being touted as a clean energy. And while it may burn clean, it doesn't mean that it's produced clean. And so there needs to be a lot of attention and emphasis on the entire fuel chain, from when it's produced, for when it's stored, when it's transported, and like when it gets put into use. But I think one thing I just want to also touch on is that, you know, energy production and tech advances, you know, essentially need to be done in a responsible way. Because we're continuing, again, the system of global capitalism, where we're creating surplus, we're overusing finite resources, and we're contributing to the climate crisis. You know, our people, Indigenous people, have used resources, you know, otherwise, like, how else would we exist? But it's done in a way that is responsible and centers stewardship and reciprocity. And so that's a worldview that I think Indigenous people are trying to teach folks across the globe. And, you know, talk about like how capitalism is really like this root cause, and colonialism are these root causes for climate crisis. It's not just a perspective and our opinion. It's the analysis. It's like the root cause for why all of this is happening. As, you know, Thomas and Sage and everybody that talks about false solutions really, you know, date this problem back to. Also, we have to be in a place where we are providing this type of information to communities, so that way communities can also have the autonomy over what they want their energy grids to look like in the future. If we're perpetuating solutions that are community-based, I think a lot of amazing things could happen. But it's when it's like global, transnational, that's where we start to have a lot of problems.
Yeah, thank you, Julia. I'm just fired up listening to everybody talk. And so I'll pass this off to Sage. Yeah, what is a solution that's being pushed forward in your territory that you know of that you consider to be false?
Well, it's a little bit different for Kahnawake because we are still a federal reserve, right? So the difference between provincial, because Quebec is provincial, and then we're a federal reserve. So it gets a little bit more complicated. And a lot of times corporations kind of go over our heads with the Federal Reserve and just implement it anyways. It's so complicated these days, I have to say, because we have major means of infrastructure that are on our territory. So we have the canal, the St. Lawrence Canal, and then we also have the seaway, and then we have the bridge, the Mercier Bridge. We have two major highways, the 132 and 138, and then we have the train rails, the train wear. And with these, like, they just kind of implemented them and differently, like federal and provincially, they own different elements. So a lot of times when they kind of present a false solution, they don't really tell us. With the wetlands, we have the Wetland Conservation Project or Foundation that came in, and they're kind of like, this one's kind of separate. So there's North Creek, which is also known as Fagerdes Creek too, where they're like helping a restoration project. And it's kind of low key, but like not necessarily presented that way in association with like offsetting. So it's kind of like, let's restore this area, but then, you know, where's that money coming from? Type of deal. And there's like a lot of those little shady deals going on, but like, you know, we always have to educate more, and I still need to be educated. So if someone from Kahnawake is like, hey, that's not true, like call me out on it and I'll educate myself more, because, you know, we always have to learn and things get miscommunicated a lot of times. But those are some of the things that are being kind of presented in town, but there's, you know, yeah, no.
Yeah, thank you. I think we'll hand this off lastly to Thomas. Yeah, what are some false solutions that are being pushed forward in your territory? Because I do feel like it happens a lot in your homelands.
Thank you, Carol. And this is such a heated question. And I want to start off by saying what Sage was speaking to, like where the money is coming from, right? And so when we look at the Inflation Reduction Act that was recently passed by the Biden administration as a so-called climate bill, we see the allocation of major funding going towards false solution projects like hydrogen, carbon capture, utilization, and storage, which Julia also spoke to, which is being used for oil enhanced recovery, where they take that captured carbon and pump it into the ground to push more oil up and out. I am enrolled as a Hoopa Valley tribal member, which is located in the Six Rivers National Forest in the northern part of California. I'm also Karuk from that same region. But in the southern part of California is the land of my ancestral peoples on my father's side, which is from Lone Pine, who is experiencing in those lands the threat of massive mining for mineral extraction for these so-called fault solutions, as well as the expansion of a massive highway system, because we still have a desire to all have our personal cars and not create public transit systems. And with these public cars comes the expansion of freeways, the continued mining for precious minerals, including lithium, which we see that is infringing upon the indigenous people's land in northern Nevada when it comes to Thacker Pass. And these projects are being funded by that Inflation Reduction Act, Biden's so-called climate bill. In our region of Northern California, we hear of the desire to go with offshore windmills, which will also create havoc on our fisheries and other wildlife populations in our region. But one of the main concerns that I have is these continuation of these cap and trade and forest offset projects. As a forest dwelling indigenous peoples, we see the targeting of our ancestral territories to use our lands as carbon sinks so that business can continue as usual when it comes to the fossil fuel industry, that the fossil fuel industry can bribe our community members, divide our community members in order to sign these 100-year contracts in order to allow the fossil fuel industry to continue to pollute and put other communities of color into harm's way with less life expectancies, high rates of asthma, high rates of cancer, and all of the other ills that comes with the fossil fuel industry. So this is also a grave concern of mine when it comes to these false solutions in our region, understanding that these carbon markets were created to cause division, not just amongst indigenous peoples, but also amongst the environmental movement, where we see other environmental organizations moving forward with supporting these false solution narratives and supporting these cap and trade carbon market projects. A very deep concern of mine as well is our hydraulic dams that we have in our region. Our tribes in Northern California, we have recently came together for the removal of 4 dams along the Klamath River, which is the world's largest dam removal project. Some of those dams have already came out of place, but understanding that how hydraulic dams are also linked to the carbon market on a global scale, and 80% of carbon offsets on a global scale is coming from hydraulic dams. And so that's concerning to me, knowing that we came together to defeat these dams and get these dams removed, but yet there may be a reason to keep them if they can be used as an offset to allow business as usual for the fossil fuel industry and to claim it as a clean energy. When we know good and well, especially communities coming from salmon regions, that dams are no form of clean energy whatsoever. So that's also very concerning for me as well. There's a lot. It's all concerning. It's dangerous.
Yeah. And this is such a heavy topic and there's so much ground to cover. And I mean, we could probably have a webinar on this that goes on for all day, right? And we just have an hour and a half today. So thank you again to everyone.
That was Carol Montour, the Climate Leadership Coordinator at the Indigenous Climate Action, ICA. She's Mohawk Wolf Clan from 6 Nations off the Grand River Territory. Before her was Thomas Joseph, Hoopa Valley Tribal Member. He's the Carbon Pricing Educator with the Indigenous Environmental Network, IEN. Sage Goodleaf LaBelle was born to the Bear Clan in what is now Canada. And Julia Bernal is from the Indigenous Nations of Sandia, Pueblo, and Yuchi, and the Executive Director for Public Action Alliance, Albuquerque, New Mexico. You heard excerpts from an 80-minute conversation that you can see on YouTube under the title Webinar, The Colonial Urge to Commodify the Climate Crisis. Unpacking False Solutions. While you are online, you may want to visit the website of the Indigenous Environmental Network, ienearth.org, and download for free a copy of Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. That's an excellent 76-page pamphlet with in-depth information on false solutions to climate change. That's ienearth.org. .org for Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. And my thanks go out to the Indigenous Climate Action, ICA, and the Indigenous Environmental Network, IEN, for this amazing meeting. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.